The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Every morning is a new opportunity to take in the news of the day and the challenges of life and try to make sense of it all. Right now, we've got a show that tackles the topics and asks what you think. So get ready to start your day with a bold look at history as it happens. Let's learn, live, and sometimes laugh together. It's the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM. The Answer.
All right, everybody, our third and final hour together, getting ready to head into the weekend for Halloween night. This is kind of wild. You're going to have trick or treaters ringing the bell while you're trying to watch the Cowboys and the Vikings, as if there's not enough tension. Every game looks like a trap game to me. The Cowboys are 5-1. Last night, the Cardinals got their first loss pinned on them by Green Bay. Many great, great teams in the NFC. If we end up, and I know I'm dreaming, I've allowed myself to emotionally invest, but our division is terrible. Even the tough games on the schedule, like Kansas City. Kansas City's mediocre all of a sudden. What? So, and Dak still has his calf injury. He may or may not even play. I don't know. So all kinds of stuff going on and many, many serious things that need addressing. A ton of them school related, a ton of them government related. Let me see how much I can just tastefully cram into this final hour with included, of course, your calls at 866-660-5759. So with all kinds of stuff going on, here's something we can all agree on. The joy of a Friday.
I feel good.
You want me to say I feel good?
I feel good.
I would not. So good. I got
you. Oh! The telephone is ringing. You got me on the run.
Sometimes, some Fridays, you just gotta have some Alice Cooper. This is one of those days. Under my wheels. Alrighty. Alrighty, take me to the show. You have brought yourselves to the show, and I am enormously grateful. Grateful in a number of ways today. Great calls, great guests, wonderful stuff. State Rep Jeff Leach, he's had to move. He's going to be on Monday. We'll talk about that. Most of the constitutional amendments, usually through life, are not real controversial. And it's not like these are necessarily controversial, but some are really newsworthy. There's one that will allow folks in like a nursing home to designate an essential caregiver that cannot be banned no matter what the next lockdown goes like. And even when I say the words, the next lockdown, my blood just runs cold. And the other one is the notion of a religious service exemption for, once again, the next lockdown, that if they come at us again, and start shutting stuff down, they can't shut down our churches. Now, I love that, right? But it's almost, this is my gig these days. There's stuff going on that I like, but some of it's not complete enough. Because the exemption for churches is like a religious freedom First Amendment thing, right? Absolutely. But freedom of association, the right to peaceably assemble, that's in the First Amendment for whatever purpose, a political meeting. You know, a neighborhood meeting, a civic organization. So, you know, I'm not saying that I bristle at the notion of saying, okay, only the churches, because anything that can prevent churches from being shut down in the next lockdown, I'm for. But I guess I just want, you know, the asterisk attached, or as they say in Maryland, asterisk. And I guess what I really, really want is, you know, I guess we're going to have to come on, you know, behind this constitutional amendment with another one that says, guess what? We ain't shutting down gatherings that are First Amendment oriented of any type. So there's that. Now, schools, and more schools. Heard from a mom in the last hour who was at, or whose daughter was at J.J. Pierce for what looked like something very close to a riot as schools, as students were marauding up and down the halls under the auspice of some walkout, some protest, and once again, this letter from Principal Carrie Breedlove, who I have no quarrel with her particularly at the moment, but it's just, it's the delicious bureaucratic vagueness that you will get from such things. And from what she described, they just completely lost control. Students went nuts, and they're all wrapped in this entitlement and empowerment of modern wokeism. And I got to tell you, this is not the last time this is going to happen. This is not the last school uprising that we're going to see, because these chowderhead kids with their minds just full of Black Lives Matter activism, wokeism, leftist adrenaline, all the dress codes are evil, all the discipline is evil, everybody's intolerant, there's not enough diverse representation, and they are going to go stark raving nuts. And this is going to be a gut check, and it's going to be a learning moment for every school and every school district. Do you guys have the stones to stand up to today's mush-brained teenagers? Now, this is very important to add this, and then we're going to go to the phones. 866-660-5759. Every once in a while in a school, students will have a grievance that deserves to be heard. They will have a complaint that has merit. They will have something that they wish to air before, you know, the school administration, and that should absolutely be done. School, you know, the principal should never go, screw you, go back to class, get out of here, go away, kid, you bother me. No, there should be openness and evaluation of all such things. This guy's sort of what student councils and such are for, and all of these things. It's a school's a big family, it's a big community that where the communication is a wonderful, wonderful idea, and an atmosphere of mutual respect. But Principal Breedlove there at J.J. Pierce on North Coit Road in Richardson has a very telling sentence after listing all of these grievances that sound just peeled straight from an MSNBC program. The students involved feel that when concerns have been shared with staff and administration, not enough responsive action has been taken. Really? In other words, these teenagers feel that the school did not sufficiently kowtow to them, did not buckle to their demands. Well, what do you do when that happens? Maybe you dust yourself off, get back to class, crack a book. How about that? Now, I'll tell you, if there is some policy that had some merit and some complaint, some grievance that had some legs then maybe you go home and say, Mom, Dad, we got this problem we want to talk about at school. Then maybe, and here, get ready, then maybe Mom and Dad go to the school board and talk about it as a matter of policy. Because you may find that school boards may be in a somewhat different mood this year than they've been in the past. Maybe, well, I guess it could cut both ways. School boards may, A, be more open and receptive because they feel like we're on to them, or they may cop a massive attitude and throw you the big cold shoulder. There's that wonderful surreptitious audio. Well, it's not surreptitious. She was on an open mic. Los Alamitos, California. Orange County, south of Los Angeles. Some parent went off about mask mandates. There's a smattering of applause. And in the moment of silence that followed the applause dying down, you can hear the school board member going, F you, with the real word. Like, whoa, okay. All right, let's hop to the phones. We head back to currently news-making Richardson, and Sherry is there, and this is a story about book lists and such, and we've explored that in depth today as well. Sherry, hi, welcome. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. Thanks for having me.
It is wonderful to have you. So, all righty, what's your story? What have you got for us today?
Yeah. So my daughter is in eighth grade in Richardson Independent School District, and she came home in, I guess, September, and was concerned that there was some inappropriate things in books that were recommended to her by her eighth grade GT teacher for English class. And I just started doing some digging, and I ended up reading seven or eight of the books and determined that all seven of the 10 books that were on this book list for her to pick from just were filled with profanity, sexually explicit content, lots about race, a very one-sided of views. And it seemed that the teacher was pushing an agenda from those books. And so I raised some flags. I called the teacher first, emailed her, got no response really from her or the principal. So then that next Monday night, I went to the board meeting and just read out loud some of the things that I found, and it got their attention for sure. It was very hard to read that out loud as a 41-year-old woman. I was uncomfortable, right, reading this in front of people. It was just shocking that this was something that was being handed out by a teacher in my daughter's classroom.
So, and you know, we would like to think, and it's so easy to be asleep at the switch to think that, I mean, and in a perfect world, responsible adults take a look at every book that might be in the curriculum or might even be on the school shelves. They're not just taking a look at 500 books from the American Library Association and going, oh, award winners, let's go with that, without any regard to how appropriate they are. And so a bunch of people are now sending around to all kinds of things. And so here, and fiction is particularly problematic. Here's a thing called Jack of Hearts and Other Parts by an author called L.C. Rosen. And this parent, I found in 342 pages, 150 of them with sexual or lustful material, references to masturbation. Oh, good Lord. Practices that I got laid last weekend at a college party. Tons of promiscuous gayness. So anyway, let me just hand the ball back to you. So where does it stand now, and what do you want to do, and what do you think's going on there in your community in Richardson?
Yeah, I mean, I just think there's a lack of transparency and a lack of kind of ownership within the school board and the superintendent on what is really going on. You know, the kind of first person I hit at the district level that wanted to talk with me about this before this board meeting, you know, she just said, well, we're just trying to reach 40,000 students with these books. And so some kids might identify with these topics and it makes them feel comfortable. And there's, like you said earlier on the show, there has to be a line of appropriateness, right? So they did respond, and they did take two of the books off of the so-called shelves or whatever. And again, I'm not, like you said, I'm not banning books. I think they should be available in the public library for any parent to go get their kid that book if they want to. But for my, you know, 13-year-old to be handed that, it's inappropriate. So there has to be some checks and balances. I think that there's so many great teachers in Richardson that actually contacted me and said, thank you for speaking out, because they don't have a voice. And then there are teachers that are going rogue, and there are district leaders that are going rogue and putting these things in place without any checks and balances. And then they actually don't want the parents' input. They don't want our input. They want us to not know what's going on and not know what books are coming home to our kids. And that's a problem, right? And you know, that's what I'm feeling now. So just more transparency and more involvement with parents. You know, there's that SHAC committee. I think you mentioned it earlier. It's the Student Health Advisory Council. You know, I've been a parent for 9 years, and I'm involved. And I was an educator out in Forney for years. And I had never heard about this in the 9 years I've been in Richardson until the board meeting agenda. And they had already picked people to be on it. It's supposed to represent community values across the district, and parents are supposed to have a say in what kind of sex ed. It even talked about COVID mitigations, which would include masks, things like that. And they didn't give us the opportunity for a well-rounded group of people to be on it. They just straight up approved six people that they don't even know what their values are. And so how can they say that they actually represent a range of community values? And I'm not saying that it should be all my values. It should be an equal representation. And that's the problem. We're not equal. There's no middle ground right now. And that's what's really frustrating. As a conservative Christian parent, how can I safely send my kids, my four kids, all the way through, up through Pierce High School? My daughter will be at Pierce next year. And hearing what happened, it's it's giving us major pause to think, is this where we're supposed to be? Because this is crazy and unsafe and not equitable. What they're trying to do is not happening. They're not giving equity to all kids.
This is what accountability looks like and sounds like. You are my hero. I am so proud of you. And I know there are a lot of folks like you, but you're the one I'm talking to. So feel the love. And here's what I'd love double, triple about you. You're an admitted Christian conservative mom, but you're not a flamethrower suggesting these are all people from the pit of hell looking to spread Satanism, because you can find that at the occasional school board meeting. You're just looking for balance. You're not looking for, you know, hardcore conservative Christian education for your kids in the public schools. You're just looking to not have their values savaged by one-sidedness from the other direction.
Exactly. That's the parents. You know, that's the parents' job. And we keep saying stay in your lane, and it's because they're not staying in the education lane. Our scores are tanking. We look horrible on school rankings. And so it's like they're not in their lane because they're trying to get over in this parent lane, and they need to be in the education lane so that I can be in the parent lane, and we both do our job, and you end up with well-rounded, very well-educated kids. And they're not doing that.
A community that contains you is a lucky one. A household that contains you is a lucky one. A talk show that welcomes you is a lucky one. Sherry, do me a favor, keep in touch, please. You may become our official correspondent on this now. So we have a growing army of those, and I am just so honored to meet you. And thank you, and keep up the good fight, okay?
I appreciate you having me on.
Oh, it's my honor. God bless. You betcha. This and listen, if you're driving around, if you're a school board member, don't fear this. Now, will you find the occasional jackwagon parent who will go nuts and come to your house? Yeah, and guess that's called local police. How many of those are there? It is infinitesimally small. Infinitesimally small. We weren't supposed to generalize about Black Lives Matter rioters, and there was a ton of violence at those things. Hey, it's mostly peaceful. Yeah, really? Those buildings are on fire. So if the lesson is don't generalize about a movement because of what just a few people do, okay, I can play that game all day long. Let's have Attorney General Merrick Garland call off the dogs of federal law enforcement seeking to intimidate and silence parents like this wonderful woman who's just looking for some accountability. And if you didn't hear State Rep Matt Krause, he was on last hour. Go get the podcast. Rhonda has the podcast up by, 45 minutes or so, 10:45, 11 o'clock, if not earlier. And you can hear him talk about this list of 850 books that they're just saying, do you have these on the shelves? And what might these offer in terms of matters of race, matters of sexuality, in terms of balance, in terms of content, in terms of appropriateness? And I know that appropriateness will differ from that feelings about that from parent to parent, from school board to school board. But let's at least see what's going on. And I don't know who sent us this. I'm just going to give you a book. Oh, okay. So who in Irving? Vicky. Hey, thank you. It looks like just your typical teen novel, Jack of Hearts and Other Parts. Well, they're right there by an author named L.C. Rosen. And I'm looking at 14 pages of excerpts from this book. And the graphic sexual content in this stupid novel for kids. Where are the grown-ups looking at this garbage and saying, is there a First Amendment right to print this? Yes. When it's grown-ups, do I leave these decisions to grown-ups to make for themselves? Of course. But it's schools, for crying out loud. It's schools. And there are grown-ups. There is a grown-up somewhere that let this garbage onto a shelf in a public school. And all you're seeing is parents who are saying, excuse me, we might want some eyes on these processes, on these books, fiction, nonfiction, whole shebang, so that we can at least have a conversation about what's going on here. Thank God we have awakened. It's 9:28.
I wonder who wrote the book of life.
Needed a song about books.
Tell me.
1958. The Monotones out of Newark, New Jersey. And they wonder who wrote the book of love. I wonder
who wrote the book of love?
Who's allowing the books packed with graphic sex to be on the shelves at schools? I mean, we're not asking much here, man. We're not asking much. All right, hey, I'm asking you to pay attention to Gordon. Here he is in the newsroom. Then we'll come back. Got a hot happening closing half hour here. Grab a line, be a part of it, 866-660-5759. I'm Mark Davis. Here's Gordon. Well, all right, here we go. Diving into the home stretch. Yeah. Little Johnny Lang. Mike Gallagher is next, coming up at 10. Dennis Prager at noon. Sean Hannity at 2. Larry Elder's back on the radio. I trust you have gathered that. He's with you at 5. Taking you into the weekend. Already, 866-660-5759. There's been so much focus, obviously, so much focus. Schools and books and what's appropriate and what's not. I am so glad to have this perspective. We are in Dallas. Hey, Rick, how are you?
I am great, Mark. How are you doing this morning?
Fantastic. And I understand you are maybe the hottest profession in America in terms of topicality, a school librarian.
Yes, absolutely. School librarian for 10 years and served in several different school districts around the Dallas area. And, you know, just kind of wanted to be able to lend a little insight into what's going on with schools and content in library books and, you know, kind of some of the viewpoint of the people who are sort of responsible for at least some of the content coming into school.
Sure. I'm so glad to have you. What do you want to lend us first? Just the floor is yours, and then we'll go back and forth on a couple of things.
Sure. As I was listening to you a moment ago, I heard you say, you know, who is it that is bringing this content into the schools? Mm-hmm. And I agree with you 100%. Librarians in school districts, whether it's elementary or secondary, in our K-12 system are typically the gatekeepers, and it's almost a calling to many of the people like me who want to put content in front of students that's helpful to them, that helps them think, that gives them critical thinking skills, mm-hmm. gives them reading ability, literacy skills, all of those kinds of things. However, with that comes a very important responsibility. With great power comes great responsibility. Mm-hmm. What is being placed in front of our students, and again, this is my perspective. I'm not speaking in this way about all librarians, but my perspective is that it must be age appropriate for the students that are being essentially serviced, mm-hmm. that we're providing these resources to. Mm-hmm. And so I think what is happening in some cases is there is such a rush sometimes to get resources, spend that budget money, order the books that you want for your library, get them in, get them on the shelves, because the kids are going to be coming in and part of their class rotations. You need books on the shelf to put in their hands. Mm-hmm. They need to be taking them home and reading them and bringing them back. That circle of life in the library, essentially. So with that, a lot of librarians depend on other sources to be able to vet books. Mm-hmm. They read reviews from places like the Horn Book or from the Library Journal or some content heavy places, but it also sometimes comes from the reps that are selling the books, the vendors. So, unfortunately, when you are ordering 1,500, 2,000 books, sometimes in a single shot, depending on the purchasing procedures of your district,
right.
You don't have time to read 1,500 or 2,000 books
right.
in entirety. Again, that's not a defense.
No, it's just it's just a fact of life.
It truly yeah. is. And you're doing that year after year after year after year.
Mm-hmm.
The issue that confronts me as a conservative, oh my gosh, I just outed myself. I can't believe it.
Look at the time.
The issue that concerns me is that some of the associations that librarians belong to tend to lean in a direction that is not always a little left to center. You know, the state association is telling us we have to bring evidence of vaccinations to our conference that's happening in April in Fort Worth.
Mm-hmm.
our national association is putting out edicts over and over that reading is an essential right, and that censorship is the biggest four-letter word in librarian science right now.
And so, these folks, so pause for a second, because this is everything you've said is so important. And this I think is one of the most vital things, from library associations to organizations that look at these things. They are filled with people who are driven to direct toward our kids a certain agenda that is probably Black Lives Matter friendly. That is, when I say LGBTQ agenda friendly, I don't mean let's be nice to people of all kinds, which we should certainly do, but advocacy for the politics of LGBTQ. They're horribly insufficiently attentive to graphic sexual content. And when you said a few minutes ago, that, and I'm just so glad to have this testimony, because if you're a school librarian, hey, here's 2,000 books. You want them? Well, yeah, give me books. Give me books. And then maybe we'll sort of look at it later. And that's why maybe it is the job of the occasional parent to go, wait a minute, here's a young adult novel. And again, this Jack of Hearts and Other Parts by this L.C. Rosen person. I looked this person up. These are literally YA young adult. That maybe if you're 22, you want to read this, and it's filled with graphic sex. There's no way in the world it should be on a school shelf. So I'd say, well, let's do. Let's find them. Let's draw attention to them, and let's all kind of work. Let's all work on this together. But the job is made harder, as I hand it right back to you for a moment. The job is made harder because a lot of these oversight committees, these representative committees, are filled with liberal activists who absolutely want provocative sexual material and BLM-flavored, CRT-flavored material in front of our kids. They actively want it.
I think there is that component, absolutely, within library science in general, certainly at the K-12 level, because you do have to have a couple of years of teaching in the classroom to even qualify to be a school librarian. And so there is that component there. There's a celebration every year of books that have been banned in any way because of content or because of, go ahead.
No. You're just the most wonderful call. Let's talk a little bit about banning of books. You think of 1930s Germany, forbidden things. It, societally speaking, of course, we shouldn't ban books. And I kind of love the attention paid to the occasional banned book. It's like, wow, this was deemed so dangerous that some authority structure didn't want people to read it. That kind of makes me want to read it, see what somebody feared so much. But it is not book banning or book burning for responsible adults to go through school reading lists and say too much sex, too much radical CRT, too much this, not enough that, and it's not appropriate for school. That is not some fascist Third Reich style exercise.
I totally agree with you. The examples that tend to be brought out are things like To Kill a Mockingbird or Uncle Tom's Cabin. Things that have a certain either racial or political component to them that have been banned, you know, in the 40s and 50s.
Now, what's your thought about that? Because a lot of it is about like the N-word in Mark Twain, Uncle Tom's Cabin by Harriet Beecher Stowe, To Kill a Mockingbird.
Right.
I believe all three of those are magnificent books that should absolutely be seen by high schoolers.
Well, I feel the same way about those that I feel about Frankenstein, that I don't necessarily think a student is going to take that book and make it a blueprint for their life, but it's an important literary work because of some, not only the writing style, but also the questions that are being asked.
Of course, exactly, and right. Grown up stuff, controversial stuff. And I'll conclude on the following because I have to. And Rick, I'm so grateful to you that what we need are folks like you, folks like some of these moms. And by this, I mean even-handed people who are just looking for balance and context rather than an agenda being shoved down the throat of our kids.
Yeah.
Rick, I mean, do me a favor, please get back into this issue ain't going away anytime soon.
I will.
Please,
Mark,
be a value part. I'm so glad. Yeah, of course you may.
Yeah. Let me toss one quick thing in that I mentioned to Rhonda that I think would be helpful for listeners. Every school district in the state of Texas has a challenge policy for any book in a classroom library or in the campus library at any public school. There's a process to go through. There's typically a form that has to be filled out. A committee has to be formed of teachers and administrators to review every book. That's the way to get books that are inappropriate off the shelf.
And we're not looking for willy-nilly things for some, for one, you know, off-the-rails parent to get an entire book banned just off on his personal. This is communities aggregately speaking out. It's the definition of accountability. Rick, thank you enormously. What a superb show today has been. Thank you. I'm in everybody's debt. Got a very cool musical birthday to pay attention to on our way out. And a final word or two, it's 9:51. Goodbye. Before Knights in White Satin, before their stuff that was big in the 80s, the Moody Blues with Denny Lane out front.
Go now, go now.
This was in November of 1964. Greatness of Go Now. Denny Lane is 77. All right, for producer Rhonda K. Moreland, technical guru skills from Mr. Matt, news excellence from Gordon Griffin. I'm Mark Davis. God bless our country, our troops, our families. Have a great day and a great weekend. Go Cowboys on Halloween night, and we'll see you Monday right here on 660 AM The Answer.
We've already said.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.